Hello, podcasters, and welcome once again to this series of podcasts brought to you in association with Kilkenny Library Services and the Government's Decade of Centenaries Fund through Kilkenny County Council. My name is Owen Swinton Welch, and in these podcasts, we explore different aspects of Kilkenny's revolutionary era history. In previous podcasts, we examined what occurred in the autumn of 1922, and I think it's fair to say that up to that point, the Free State authorities must have been reasonably satisfied on the military front, at least. They had made much progress over the summer months of 1922, especially in regaining control of the towns and villages fairly quickly. To some, the civil war appeared to have all been but won. This confidence, however, was a tad premature. Much like the British had discovered during the War of Independence, guerrilla war-type tactics meant it would be difficult to defeat rural and mobile units of the anti-treaty IRA. This was especially true within the rural areas of County Kilkenny, where there was no permanent presence of the Free State Army, except when the latter passed through on patrols. But this had a downside for the IRA too as the Civil War progressed, as these anti-treaty IRA units became more and more isolated, which meant they had to act mostly on their own initiative with little direction from above. So I suppose, in other words, to summarise, the anti-treaty were down, but they were certainly not out at this point. But before we talk about the IRA fight back in Kilkenny in December 1922, we'll take a quick look at the state of play on both sides. So, how many people were in the Free State Army in Kilkenny in December 1922? Luckily for us, we can get a fairly accurate figure for this, as the military archives hold the records of a so-called army census, which was held on a night in the middle of November in 1922, so just a few weeks before what we're talking about here. All the Free State soldiers in each barracks all around the country were counted. Now, this might seem like a strange thing to do, but the Free State Army had been growing exponentially since the summertime. And as this was before the advent of computers and such like, the authorities didn't actually know or have an exact number of how many soldiers were in their ranks and where they were all based. Hence the reason for the army census. So in total, there were 738 Free State soldiers in County Kilkenny in November 1922. Now, these were stationed in 8 different locations. Now, these 8 barracks were Kilkenny City, which contained by far the most at 517 soldiers in November 1922, which I suppose is not surprising as it was the building that could most easily be secured. And it also had the most accommodation for soldiers. And of course it contained an awful lot of weapons, so it needed to be protected in that regard too. Other Free State soldiers were located in Kilkenny Jail that night, and this was on Rock Street, which of course is not there anymore. These Free State soldiers would have been mostly acting as prison wardens for the growing number of anti-treaty men inside Kilkenny Jail. But still, 25 people managed to escape from the prison a week after this census was taken, so they did well to get out of that. Also on that night, Callan Free State Barracks contained 40 soldiers, Castlecomer Barracks contained 47 soldiers, Munkine Barracks contained 24 soldiers, Mullivat Barracks had 20 soldiers, Thomastown also had 20 soldiers, and Urlingford Barracks had 48 soldiers in total on that night in November 1922. Now, I should say the location of some of these garrisons was dictated by the availability of suitable premises rather than by, say, strategic choice. The number of troops based in County Kilkenny also fluctuated throughout the Civil War. The Free State Army was on a near continuous recruitment drive, which of course expanded the garrisons. But soldiers based in Kilkenny were also transferred to more volatile areas of the 2nd Southern Command, such as the garrisons in Cashel, Clonmel and Waterford, sometimes South Wexford as well, as the situations arose. The average age of the Free State forces in Kilkenny was 25 years old. Now, interestingly, the oldest Free State soldier was 57-year-old John Reardon, who gave his address as care of Mrs. J. Shortle from Upper Walken Street in Kilkenny City. And of course, he was stationed in the barracks in Kilkenny City there, now James Stephens Barracks. The youngest Free State soldier I could find was 14-year-old Patrick Hogan, also from Walken Street in Kilkenny City, who was also based in the barracks in Kilkenny. Now, he had only enlisted in the army the previous month, that's October 1922, falsely stating that his age was 15 years old. And this happened in armies, not just in Ireland, but all around the world. If someone looked like they could be 16 or 18 plus, they were usually taken in, no questions asked. Now, in its effort to quickly defeat the anti-treaty IRA, the Free State authorities recruited rapidly, but only provided rudimentary training, if really any training at all. The type of men recruited by the Free States irked some within the anti-treaty IRA too, as a lot of their recruits were former British soldiers or labourers who had not fought with the IRA during the War of Independence, but who had fought with Irish regiments of the British Army during World War I. From the anti-treaty viewpoint, these men had not been willing to volunteer and fight against the Crown forces the previous years, but were now prepared to accept payment to fight against their fellow Irishmen. Maybe this is one reason offered as to why some within the anti-treaty IRA were not overburdened with guilt if they had to fire on a Free State soldier. Now, to switch your attention to the anti-treaty IRA or Republican side, and of course the Free State government would have called these irregulars, which was a kind of derogatory term to prove the regular situation of the actual Free State Army. I suppose at this stage of the Civil War, attempting to calculate the precise number of active anti-treaty IRA within Kilkenny is much more difficult. We don't have the luxury of a census for them, of course, and much of their paperwork, if it existed at all, didn't survive the Civil War period or after it. Retrospectively, we do know the anti-treaty numbers at the start of the Civil War in Kilkenny. The total number of anti-treaty IRA in July 1922 was 2,151, and that seems like quite a lot, over 2,000. However, it doesn't mean they all took part in active fighting or that they joined a flying column, we'll say. So only a smaller portion of these, perhaps in the low hundreds, took part in active fighting, but we can kind of only surmise at this stage. In addition, many of them were rounded up and interned as the Civil War progressed, before and some even before they even got a chance to fight or even go on the run. And also, in relation to the anti-treaty, many would have been kind of part-time soldiers. They might have tried to continue farming or holding down a job to make ends meet, or perhaps they fought in the first few weeks in the Civil War and gave up. This, of course, was different to the Free State soldiers, which had full-time jobs in the army and full-time pay. So there's that element too. Now, first, before we talk about Kilkenny, if we move to what happened in December 1922 nationally, it really was a pivotal, if grim, I should say, month. It all really anchors around 3 days, the 6th, the 7th, and the 8th of December 1922. On the 6th of December, exactly 1 year after the treaty was signed in London, the Free States officially came into existence. Prior to that, we had the provisional or interim government. Laws were passed in London and the Dublin Parliaments to recognise that event, so it was a historic day, albeit, of course, the anti-treaty side would have seen it as an infamous day. From their perspective, it was the official sellout of the Republic they had been fighting for the watered-down Free State. Another thing they used to say was it was the first time that any Irishman in 700 years had voted to go into the British Empire, not by force, but by choice. But E.T. Keane, the editor of the Kilkenny People, was in a pensive mood that week. Here's a little bit of his editorial, quote, "The ship of the Irish Free States has been launched on the seas. Desperate seas they are at present. It is for Ireland to say whether that ship will flounder on the rocks, or whether the storm will pass and the voyage be happy and beneficial." End quote. Now, initially, to paraphrase E.T. Keane there, it looked like the Free States might flounder on the rocks. The very next day, that is the 7th of December, the last Ciún Comhairle of the Dáil, the vice chair of the Dáil, Pádraig O'Malley of Galway, was badly wounded, and another pro-treaty TD, Sean Hales of Cork, was shot dead in Dublin on their way to the Dáil by an anti-treaty IRA kind of hit gang. And Sean Hales was very popular in Cork during the War of Independence, during the fight with the British. Then, in retaliation for this, the very next day, the 8th of December 1922, the Feast of the Immaculate Conception, a holy day, the Free State authorities executed four anti-treaty prisoners, Joe McKelvey, Rory O'Connor, Lee Mellows and Richard Barris. These men had been captured during the summer months. Grimly, it was one man from each province of Ireland. This was a reprisal, pure and simple, and no effort was made to legally justify the executions. The gloves were certainly off, so the Irish Free State had a very bloody birth between the 6th, 7th and 8th of December, probably the reason there were very muted commemorations of the event on the 6th of December 2022. Now, on a more positive note for Kilkenny people, the president of this new executive council of the Free State, in other words, the Taoiseach before the term was used, was William T. Cosgrave, W.T. Cosgrave. He, of course, was the local TD for Kilkenny North constituency. And he did not forget his constituents, as almost immediately he recommended and appointed two Kilkenny people to the newly created Senate. These were the Mayor of Kilkenny, Peter de Lucri, and Ellen Cuff, the Dowager Countess of Desert, who was a philanthropist and of course a Gaelic revivalist as well as other things. She also became the first Jewish person to hold a seat in the new Irish Parliament. Now, taking a seat in the Senate was not without its risks, as Liam Lynch, the Chief of Staff of the Anti-Treaty Forces, had compiled a list of senators' houses to be burnt down or destroyed. Indeed, Lady Desart's former home of Desart Hall was destroyed some months later. Edward Mansfield, who was a native of Mulnahone near Callan, was also elected as a senator with support from the Labour Party. He was an active member of the INTO and an Irish language enthusiast as well. However, he resigned his seat after only a few days in protest over the Free State government's reprisal executions. So that is what was happening on the national stage. But now to move closer to home. Just a day after the executions in Dublin, the anti-treaty side hit back and it was down this neck of the woods. Emotions were understandably running very high. The Free State side, by the way, were still led by Commandant Prowse in the 2nd Southern Division, which was headquartered in Kilkenny, of course. He was widely praised for his efforts in suppressing the anti-treaty IRA in the Battle of Kilkenny in May, while he received similar praise for his actions dislodging the anti-treaty in Waterford and Carrick-on-Shore in July 1922. However, in December, the anti-treaty IRA made an audacious counter-offensive, which embarrassed Prowse, the Free State Army locally, and by extension, the new Executive Council or government. Development started in the town of Carrick-on-Shore, close to the southwest border of Kilkenny, which of course was in Commandant Prowse's command area. On the night of the 9th of December 1922, a day after the executions in Dublin, Tom Barry, the well-known War of Independence fighter from West Cork, led a column of about 100 anti-treaty IRA who swept into the town late in the evening. It was believed that Barry, who was quoted as a law unto himself, decided to capture Carrick-on-Shore without any direction above from his superiors. He was obviously showing his reaction to the executions in Dublin, and he would have met some of the people that were executed. His column easily stormed the workhouse, which contained the Free State garrison, the occupants yielding quickly, having been taken by surprise. There was a gun battle also near the West Gate, where two Free State soldiers and a civilian were shot. Eventually, the approximately 100 Free State soldiers in the town surrendered. They were marched out to the main street where they were kept under armed guard. The workhouse and the Hibernian Hall, housing the two Free State garrisons in the town, were then set on fire. The anti-treaty IRA seized a massive haul of 107 rifles and two Lewis machine guns, as well as a Crossley tender lorry and two motor cars. Just 4 days after these events in Carrick, on Thursday, the 14th of December, a section of this IRA column, under the overall command now of Bill Quirk and Dinny Lacey of Tipperary, travelled by motor vehicles into County Kilkenny, obviously some of the ones they had stolen from Carrick, probably. The Kilkenny contingent of the column was led by Ned Elward of Callan. Their aim was to capture the Free State garrisons in Callan, followed by Thomastown and Mullinavass. It would later become clear to the Free State authorities that the strategy of the anti-treaty IRA that night had been planned. It also quickly became apparent that there was some disloyalty within the Free State ranks. Two Free State officers in Callan and Thomastown barracks, namely Captain Edward Ned Summers, aged 33, and Lieutenant Martin Kerwick, aged 21, had met some of the anti-treaty IRA leaders in the weeks previously, with the purpose of organising some kind of truce arrangement in the area, it was believed. However, the Free State officers were instead persuaded to cross over to the anti-treaty IRA side. In addition, another Free State captain, Jimmy Kelly, who was in charge of Monkine Barracks, also defected. No doubt the executions of the four leaders might have had something to do with this. Kelly, Kerwick and Summers were from the Callan district originally and were members of the 7th Battalion during the War of Independence. Thus, I'm just saying they would have known each other and many of the anti-treaty men personally. Obviously, some believe the execution of the four leaders in the previous week was a step too far by the Free State. These four leaders, well regarded and well respected in the War of Independence, had been arrested and put in jail before the laws came into effect in September, October about carrying arms and the execution policy. So it's likely some thought this was a step too far, it was just a bit below the belt. Now, from the Free State perspective, they would have seen it as a necessary evil. And they could back this up later, as no Free State senator, RTD, was killed after the four leaders were executed. Now, the capture of all three barracks in County Kilkenny on the night of the 14th and into the morning of the 15th of December was accomplished in much the same manner. Roughly, it went along the following lines. Firstly, Summers requested admittance to the garrison. As the sentries knew Summers as a Free State captain, and even if they didn't, he had the uniform on, they let him in and let him proceed. Summers was accompanied by a small party of Moriah Free State soldiers. These were actually anti-treaty IRA men in disguise, as they were all wearing uniforms of the Free State Army. The outfits, we believe, had been stolen from the soldiers in Carrick-on-Shore a few nights previously. Once the doors of the barracks had been open, the disguised anti-treaty IRA and the others that were nearby stormed the building without a shot being fired. So on the evening of the 14th of December, the anti-treaty IRA arrived in Callan about 6:45 p.m. Summers disarmed one of the outpost sentries by putting a revolver to his head. Summers then went inside the garrison, which was located at the time in the workhouse complex. Once inside, he entered the soldiers' common area. He told the privates that a truce was just after being agreed in the county, and because of this, they had to hand in their weapons. Summers was aided in Callan Barracks by Lieutenant Doyle, who was also complicit in the decease. Once all the Free State soldiers had been disarmed, the barracks was then flooded with anti-treaty IRA men. All the soldiers were then brought to the canteen. These are the Free State soldiers. Summers gave £1 for free drinks behind the bar, and then he made a speech. He said he was sacrificing his £4 per week wages from being a captain in the Free State Army, and encouraged all the Free State soldiers that were there then to join him. Only six privates of the approximately 42 or so soldiers that were in the garrison that night joined Summers. Three of the six were natives of Kilkenny City, while the other three were from Castlecomer. The remainder of the disarmed Free State soldiers were left go free into the night about 9:30 p.m. After taking the 60 rifles from Callan, the anti-treaty IRA column then proceeded to Thomastown. They entered the town around 2 a.m. and took the barracks quite quickly, with Summers and his party once again pretending to be the Free State soldiers. The IRA also captured the Norview Hotel, which some of the Free State troops were garrisoned in. The IRA column then spread out through the streets looking for Free State soldiers billeted in the houses around the town, as they didn't have enough accommodation for them. They would ask the same question once they knocked on the door: "Is any of our fellows staying in there?" As the IRA men were wearing the Free State uniforms, our fellows of course implied it was the Free State soldiers that they were looking for. In this way, all the Free State troops in the town were rounded up and lodged in the Norview Hotel. They were given the option of defecting to the Antrim Treaty side, of which 9 actually acceded. The courthouse in Thomastown was also seized. The members of the Civic Guard who were based there were given 5 minutes to leave before their building was set alight. It was totally gutted within a few hours. After gathering all the weapons and destroying the telegraph system in the local post office so word wouldn't get out, the anti-treaty IRA left the town. Just before leaving, IRA leader Lieutenant Kerwick addressed the captured Free State soldiers and said, "Goodbye now, lads, and off you go to bed." After acquiring all the munitions they could get their hands on in Thomastown, the anti-treaty men made their way to Mullinavass. They cut down trees and cut down telegraph lines along the way in order to prevent any Free State reinforcements pursuing quickly. Arriving in the village at around 5:30 a.m, it's a bit of a walk or trek along those roads, Summers performed his by now usual guise. He did change his story slightly, saying his group of Free State soldiers, Maria, had been attacked by the irregulars in Callan, and after following them to Hugginstown had lost them. Hence they came to Mullinavass for shelter. Once Summers and his foe Free State soldiers were inside, the small garrison was quickly overrun. Once again, all the weapons and ammunition were transported away in 4 lorries. In the aftermath of this night, the majority of the anti-treaty IRA column then moved south and crossed the River Shore into County Waterford to regroup and rest in the relative safety of the Nyre Valley. In total, about 20 Free State soldiers are believed to have switched sides during that eventful night. Now, later that same day, the garrison in Mullinavass was evacuated by the Free State forces as they had no means of protecting it themselves. 3 days later, the barracks was set alight and destroyed by the local IRA, more likely, who were in the command of a guy named MacDonald, it doesn't give his first name, in order to stop the Free State forces re-garrisoning it, of course, at a later date. That's why the barracks had to be destroyed. Now, the daring Captain Ned Summers of Callan, who switched side and was kind of the mastermind that night, continued to fight with the anti-treaty IRA until he himself was killed 4 months later by Free State soldiers. This happened on the 16th of April 1923. He was sheltering in the ruins of Castleblake Castle in Rose Green, County Tipperary. The castle was surrounded by Free State soldiers, and Summers and his comrade, T.O. English, were shot dead while they tried to make a run for it. Before the fighting and his subsequent death, Summers owned and managed a mill in Mallardstown, Callan, though his family were originally from Tipperary. Highlighting the divisions of the Civil War, one of Edward Summers' brothers, Patrick, was in the Free State Army at the time, so his brother's army ended up killing him in the end. Their sister did much of the work in the mill when the men were absent. Ned Summers was 33 years old when he died. Now, to add insult to injury for Prowse and the Kilkenny Free State authorities, in a separate incident, Martin Medler's East Kilkenny ASU, or Flying Column, captured the Free State outpost at Coon Barracks in the north of the county before Christmas 1922. This was another simple encounter, as the anti-treaty men had organised ladies to entertain them inside the barracks before they surprised them taking their uniform and arms. So there would have only been 7 Free State soldiers in there trying to stop the barracks being destroyed, basically, but it was captured in the end. In the aftermath of the anti-treaty IRA victories, they were keen to emphasise the courteous nature in which they treated the captured Free State soldiers. This was undoubtedly a jibe or a dig at the Free State government, who by this stage had executed a dozen Republican prisoners. The anti-treaty publicity pamphlet, the Republican War Bulletin, commented after the capture of the 4 Kilkenny barracks, quote, "Not a single one of these colonels has been maltreated, not to say murdered. We do know what chivalry is. No one expects otherwise from an Irish army, and the people now realise which is the Irish Army, meaning of course the anti-treaty side, end quote. Bill Quirk, who was by then the OC of the 2nd Southern Division of the anti-treaty IRA and was present in all the barracks captures, described how the capture of so many barracks was the shot in the arm that the anti-treaty needed at the time, giving them a much-needed morale boost. Quote, "Our forces captured Carrick-on-Shore. Tam Barry, the OC of operations of the 2nd Southern, was with us for this event and the first man in the gate. A week later, we captured Callan, Thomastown and Mullevass, thereby creating a very favourable atmosphere along the borders of Kilkenny and Waterford and distributing something like 200 rifles to previously unarmed IRA men. Dick Barris, Joe McKelvey and Rory O'Connor and Lee Mellows had been executed by the Free State Government, and the capture of so many towns in the area was regarded as a suitable answer. Things had gone pretty badly with the IRA in most counties, but new life had come with the success of the fighting of the 2nd Southern Division. After Mullevass, we retreated across the shore for a much-needed rest in the Nyer Valley." End quote. As you can imagine, in the aftershock of the embarrassing debacles, the Free State authorities were searching for someone to apportion blame. The gravest offence, of course, was the disloyalty of some of the Free State officers, but also a large haul of rifles and ammunition were now in the hands of the anti-treaty IRA. From the perspective of some within the Free State government, the fault rested solely on the shoulders of Commandant Prowse. Some had been critical of his command for some time. Just a few months earlier, Prowse's soldiers in Clonmel were singled out as being one of the most undisciplined in the country. After Prowse requested more arms in December, he received a curt response from the Free State Army GHQ, quote, "Your officers and men are letting us down at a critical moment and throwing away the fruits of months of work," end quote. Indeed, the cabinets of the Free State wanted Prowse removed from his command as they were dissatisfied with his performance. According to Cabinet Minister Ernest Blyce, Defence Minister Richard Mulcahy ignored the instructions of his fellow cabinet colleagues and he gave Prowse another chance, that being Mulcahy. The cheeky ruse, though employed by the anti-treaty IRA and the ease with which the barracks were captured, brought the kind of unwelcome attention the young Free State government could do without. It made good newspaper headlines as well. Although the capture of the barracks in South Kilkenny had been bloodless, as mentioned, the capture of the town of Carrick-on-Shore the week previously was not. One of those that died there was a Kilkenny man. Now on the night, Carrick was taken by Tam Barry and a gunfight developed at the West Gate near the Clonmel roadside. It's kind of at the end of Main Street there where the street tightens. After a Free State soldier there in plain clothes called on some anti-treaty IRA men to halt. In the resulting gun battle, Free State Lieutenant James Gardner, who was the intelligence officer there in Carrick, was hit by a bullet in the forehead. He lingered for some hours but passed away on Sunday night, the 10th of December 1922. He was from Chatsworth Street in Castlecomer and was just 2 weeks shy of his 29th birthday. His body was brought back to Castlecomer for his funeral. A full military guard of honour was present, led by Captain Brennan of the Free State Army in Castlecomer, which lined the route to the Protestant graveyard where Gardner was laid to rest. A firing party from Kilkenny Barracks discharged volleys over his grave in his honour. Lieutenant Gardner had spent 11 years in the British Army and came close actually to being killed on more than one occasion during the First World War. His mother Sarah later received £60 compensation for the death of her eldest son, a few thousand euro in today's money. Sarah had already experienced much hardship as during the First World War her second son, Joseph, was killed. He died in Belgium just 3 weeks after the war commenced in August 1914, although the family weren't notified until the following year. Joseph was 18 years old at the time of his death. Lieutenant James Gardner received much praise from a former comrade who wrote a touching tribute which included the following lines. Quote, "His tenacity was remarkable. I can say without the least fear of being contradicted that once he set out to do a thing, he could not rest content until it was done. Could he not, if he so willed, have surrendered, knowing the odds were against him? But no, he preferred to fight. His service was short, but truly it was meritorious, if ever such there was. End quote. So, just to wrap up there, as the Christmas of 1922 rolled around, to neutral observers at least, it looked like there was no end in sight to this thing. The Civil War, which looked to be over after a few weeks in July, was now heading into its sixth month, and the anti-treaty had made some startling successes in Kilkenny at least, which armed them up for the new year 1923. There may even have been some increased public support since the executions had started and the daring way they took the barracks. So, as people came together for Christmas 1922, no one had any clear idea of how this thing would play out and when it would end. Yes, the Free State Army was by far superior on every front, men, munitions, etc., but the anti-treaty showed no signs of stopping just yet. So, after the drama of that week or two in Kilkenny and Carrick in December 1922, I think that's where we leave it today. Just to thank you all once again for listening. Until next time.